When we were looking at the possibilities for doing this edition, we thought it was important to try to create an edition that doesn't simply print what the newspapers print, because everybody is agreed. Lincoln, Douglas, the reporters, everybody is agreed that these accounts are imperfect.
That's Douglas Wilson, co-director with Rodney Davis of the Lincoln Study Center at Knox College. And this is The Real Issue, The Real Debates, an audio series on the Lincoln-Douglas debates. The podcasts in this series have looked at each of the seven debates. In this one, Douglas Wilson and Rodney Davis talk about the debate series and how they edited their book, The Lincoln-Douglas Debates, the Lincoln Study Center edition, published by the University of Illinois Press. The texts of the debates were first printed in newspapers. Some newspapers in 1858 were partial to Stephen A. Douglas, others were partial to Abraham Lincoln, and each side had its own transcribers. Horace White and Robert Hitt worked for the main Lincoln paper. James Sheridan and Henry Binmore worked for the main Douglas paper. Douglas Wilson talks about the problems the transcribers faced trying to take verbatim notes at the debates.
They are not strictly accurate. And there are reasons for this, legitimate reasons. That is to say, even Hitt, the reporter who is trying to report his own man, Lincoln, very, very faithfully, can't quite accomplish that because the conditions are such that sometimes he can't be heard, sometimes the crowd gets in the way, sometimes the conditions for writing become insupportable on the platform. There are practically no facilities provided. It's very hard for both sides to do the necessary stenographic note-taking to get a really good, even hard as they try. So Lincoln, as I suggested before, Lincoln makes a number of corrections to the Tribune text, to his own text, that he gets from the other paper. In other words, there's clearly a glitch or a mistake or a confusion in the text. He goes to the other paper and he sees that the other paper reported this in a much more accurate way, even though it's the opposition paper. And as I said, I think it was some 24 or 25 instances of this. So what we've done is to systematically, Lincoln couldn't do this too much of this. He could not afford to be accused of rigging the text. So he could only make a few changes. But we decided to do this systematically, and we found a great many things. In fact, I just think it's remarkable for the times when we say, this doesn't sound right. Somehow this sentence, this isn't the right word, or this isn't the right construction. Go to the other paper. And even though this is an opposition account, they aren't taking the pains with it that they're taking with their own guy. There's often a clarification, you can see. This is quite remarkable. I think it tells you that the other side doesn't want to be suspected of not providing an adequate account of what the other person said. And I think that, except for the Ottawa debate where Douglas's employee, Binmore, does clearly try to sabotage Lincoln's remarks, by and large, the differences are probably pretty much what Horace White says, and that is you have to spend a lot of time with those phonographic notes reconstructing the material. It just doesn't read itself off. And they didn't do that with the opposition. They said, well, here's what he's saying. This is good enough. Just write out something that's something like a paraphrase. I think both sides did that to the other guy. They didn't do it to their own guy. They took great pains with their own guy. So what we've tried to do is to use a critical method, and wherever we can, we clarify and correct, and sometimes expand. I think it's the end of the Quincy debate where Lincoln has the close, and whether it's a space issue, I don't know, but there are several hundred words at the end of that debate that are clear. Clearly Lincoln was talking, there's no way the other paper could have made all of this up. Somehow, the Tribune left a big hunk out of the end of their man's speech And my own thought would be it's probably for space. They said, you know, nothing important is being said, and we really are cramped for space. We'll just cut it and cut, as I say, several hundred words out. Well, that's worth knowing. I mean, if you're interested in what Lincoln really said, you have to go to the other paper because they're still following along, but somehow it didn't make it into print. But we can't ever be sure when we see that there are discrepancies that we can't be sure whether who's responsible for them. I think by and large, when you see the Lincoln's words in the Tribune, you're looking at Hitt's reporting as helped by Horace White. When you see Douglas's words, you're looking at Sheridan's reporting, probably helped by Binmore. But it's always possible for the editors to change a word. Think, well, that he didn't put that right, or that's ambiguous, or that opens the door to something. Let's just change that. I mean, you've always got to account for that. So in this age of just the very beginning of verbatim transcripts and partisan, the combination, as I said before, with partisan politics, we just have to accept that we're not going to get a pure transcript. So that's why we've spent a good deal of time cross-examining these texts and trying to find a way to make them better and make them more readable. As you can imagine, texts that are printed and edited very quickly and put in the newspaper are going to be, all the punctuation has to be added by somebody. And often the punctuation is just confusing. It's because they didn't have time to make it clear. And so we have said the punctuation was not put in there by Lincoln and Douglas. It was put in by other people. We reserve the right to correct the punctuation wherever we think we can clarify the meaning. And there, I give examples of that. There are a number of places. And the spelling. I mean, they don't spell consistently or regularly. Sometimes they use 19th century forms. Sometimes they don't. So we have regularized the spelling. The paragraphing. Sometimes they don't change the paragraph for half a column. This is simply to save space. We've paragraphed according to meaning. When he shifts his topic, then we paragraph. So we've done those things that are different from previous editions, and I think it'll make them much more readable.
The book, The Lincoln-Douglas Debates, The Lincoln Study Center Edition, is available from Amazon.com or the publisher, the University of Illinois Press. Rodney Davis concludes now with an analysis of the debates.
What becomes apparent to me is the extent to which Lincoln is constantly changing his approach, and the extent to which he becomes increasingly in control of the proceedings. He's definitely on the defensive at Ottawa. He didn't look good there at all. He tried to take the offensive at Freeport, but he really didn't succeed because he didn't follow up on the question that he asked Douglas that he expected to embarrass Douglas with. He definitely begins to take an offensive stance at Jonesboro when he takes Douglas to task for Douglas's answer to the Freeport question. And he also asks another embarrassing question of Douglas, a question which would haunt Douglas as late as the Democratic nominating convention in 1860. Essentially, what Douglas's stance would be, since the Dred Scott decision would allow slavery to be carried anywhere in the national territories, given that stipulation by the Dred Scott decision, would Douglas support a national slave code? Would Douglas support federal legislation, in other words, which would exist to protect slaves? Lincoln knew the answer to that question. Douglas would say no. He did say no at the Jonesboro debate. But this was probably a more significant question in 1858 and certainly 1860 than the one that was posed by the Freeport question. And this tendency of Lincoln to essentially take the offensive and to increasingly control the conditions of the debates, I think we see amplified at Galesburg, and something that expands in the last three debates at Galesburg, Quincy, and Alton. Lincoln told Horace White at one time that the issues simply kept expanding in his mind, and he was not stuck with the same speech in the same way Douglas was. He gave different speeches. And the Quincy, the Galesburg, and the Ault debates are all quite dissimilar, but Lincoln really comes into his own nonetheless at the peroration to the Ault debate, in which he makes his strongest case for the immorality of slavery as an institution. So to answer your question, I think Lincoln's growth in articulateness, in eloquence, in command of the debate situation is something that I find most impressive about the Lincoln-Douglas debates.
That's Rodney Davis. With Douglas Wilson, they are co-directors of the Lincoln Study Center at Knox College and co-editors of the Lincoln-Douglas Debates, the Lincoln Study Center edition. The music in these podcasts is Hunter's Chorus by Julius Benedict, whose works were popular in mid-19th century America, from a recording of Civil War-era music provided by the Library of Congress. Your narrator has been Peter Bailey. This is The Real Issue, The Real Debates, a presentation of Knox College and the Lincoln Study Center at Knox College.